This week we took a ride up to Gloucester, Massachusetts, just outside Boston. You may know it for the heartbreak of the fishing boat lost with all aboard, a story told in the book and movie The Perfect Storm. Gloucester's getting attention now for another headline and heartbreak. In March, after the fourth heroin overdose death last spring, Gloucester's police chief, Leonard Campanello, declared amnesty for heroin users. Come in, no arrests, just rehab. The very first person I talked to, a 16-year-old, was very much in favor.
My cousin, her fiancé, died a while ago from a heroin overdose, and she recently spoke at the overdose vigil that was in Gloucester. And I think it's great, like, when you treat them like criminals, like, it doesn't get any better. And, you know, when you provide help for them, they get their lives back on track.
But down at Gloucester's harbor, where tourists eat at outdoor cafes, it's a different story. The fishing industry has been gutted here. There are limits on catches because of diminished stocks. Several fishermen we met were in no mood for an amnesty program.
So you want me to spend my tax money on a junkie that eventually they're going to go get their methadone, then they're going to go buy some heroin, then they're going to go break into my house and steal what I got to pay for more heroin.
Actually, the Gloucester Amnesty Program has only cost the city about $5,000 so far because money seized from drug dealers and sales, still very much illegal, pay for part of it. And police don't cover costs after an addict goes into treatment. They've formed a partnership with the mayor, pharmacies, and a local hospital, which promises to give fast-track help to addicts who come in through the police, and opened a nonprofit called the Police Assisted Addiction and Recovery Initiative. We sat down with a very tired-looking Chief Campanello on Labor Day and asked, how's it going?
We think it's going pretty well. We have about 153 in treatment in 97 days.
Wow.
100 days or so since the program began.
That's amazing. Where are they from?
A large percentage is focused on the Cape Ann and North Shore area. We do have people from all over the state. We've had a few from outside the state. Those are a bit harder to place. But we're partnering with so many treatment facilities right now that we usually are able to get people into treatment within a few hours.
Well, I have heard that people are hearing about this across the country, and they are coming from outside the state. Does that worry you that Gloucester, which has such a problem of its own, might then become a mecca for people from outside the state?
I don't know that we have a bigger or smaller problem than any other community. I think we're pretty typical. You know, from the beginning, we were very aware of what we were undertaking and had hoped on the cavalry coming, so to speak, and it seems to be happening. We've signed up quite a few police departments who are engaging in the demand side of the issue from a law enforcement perspective, and they range from right here in Massachusetts out to Pennsylvania and beyond, and we continue to work with more and more every day. So, no, we don't worry about becoming a mecca. We want to help as many people as we can, and we want to get people engaged in this conversation.
Well, and so you're saying that other communities are adopting. You have a nonprofit that you've established as well, so other communities are adopting it on their own home ground, making it maybe less necessary in the long run for people to come here.
Yeah, we don't pretend that the Gloucester model will work for every community, but we do know that law enforcement can have an active voice in how we deal with addiction. And what we're finding is that more and more police departments are jumping on board.
Yeah, chiefs of police organizations have spoken up and said, you know, how much they applaud this. Take us back to that moment of epiphany you had. I think, if I've got this right, you'd just been told that the fourth death from a heroin overdose had happened. And you literally got up and went to just write something on social media. You'd done posts before, and it's, you know, it's nice. You're interacting with the community, the police department is. But this one, I mean, you said, don't be a statistic. We can help you. Were you surprised when it took off?
Well, that initial post in March, you know, it hit 37,000 people, which is about 10,000 more than we have here in the city. So that was a little surprising. The forum that we the city held, and then as a result announced our policy as a police department, and then we announced it on Facebook, which got 2.5 million hits, and then was shared 30,000 times to another 30 million people, was overwhelming. We did not expect to see such a concentrated and concerted opinion from the public around the nation.
Talk about where the message came from. You'd been a narcotics officer. You know, this idea of switching from do drugs and you do time, you know, that was a language for decades, to we want to help, this compassionate, we're police officers and we can help you. Where did that switch come from in you?
We saw a need here in the community. There was a need and a want from the community that didn't want people with addiction being arrested or incarcerated. We felt as though we could partner with local facilities in order to try to speed up the process of getting people into treatment.
And had you seen that as an officer? I mean, there are many families who know this. They've known all along, you know, this is an illness. this is a disease. You obviously saw it too.
Well, it struck us very hard. You know, at the beginning, we got a crash course in the healthcare system in, 12, 13 weeks. And, the notions that came to us were, imagine if you had a relative or a friend or a loved one who had cancer, and the only way you could get them help is by arresting them. It didn't make sense. It immediately didn't make sense. And, we don't want to be in the healthcare business. But if a police department can put 150 people into beds within 24 hours over the course of 3 months, then anybody should be able to. We've drawn a line in the sand, and we expect those who are more responsible than law enforcement for this issue to step up.
You've had facilities join you. Also, you promised that for everyone who turns themselves in, they bring their drugs, they bring their works, they bring all the stuff, and they get an angel. Who are the angels?
Angels are very simple. They're members of the community. They may be in recovery. They may have had loved ones who suffered from addiction or passed away, or they may be just volunteers who want to help. And we don't train them as recovery coaches. We don't train them as advocates. We know that a person who's suffering from addiction is 10 times more likely to stay and wait for treatment if they have someone just to talk to and just to be there with them in the moment than if they didn't.
What's it been like? I mean, I'm going to tell our listeners, you don't look like a guy who likes media attention. You're giving me a very dry look and you're smiling. You're exhausted. What else has it done for you on your end?
What has it done for me? I think it's more what it's done for the city, what it's done for the department. You know, it feels like there's something being accomplished. This job, you tend to bang your head against the wall a lot. And this feels like we're making some headway.
Have you ever seen anyone overdose?
Too many.
That can't be fun.
I think, this job shows you a lot of death in different ways. And so, you can sometimes get hardened to it. I think that senseless death, tragic death, is a lot more painful to see. Senseless in the means that there's no reason why these people have to die for lack of help. This program is created on the idea that you're ready for help, and that's when you come in. And we should be able to carry that through forever. So someone who continuously wants help with their addiction should never be turned away. It's the same thing as cancer. If someone chooses not to treat their cancer, that's one thing. If someone wants help, they're never, ever turned away. So we need to start treating it like that. This is a lifelong illness that only goes into remission. It's never cured. And the sooner we start viewing that in those terms, the more economical this so-called war on drugs gets, the less people that are incarcerated for no other reason than possessing an illegal substance. We start saving money, actually.
What would you say to those who say, I can't do this, Chief. I can't buy this. This is, you're getting soft. It's a matter of personal responsibility, and they make a choice. What would you say to them that we can air?
That you can air. I'd say come follow me around for a day and come look into the faces of the addicted people themselves and their loved ones and put yourself in their shoes. Because I'm under no illusions that it could be a loved one of mine, and neither should anybody else be. It's not a question of economic status. It's not a question of two-parent, one-parent households. It's not a question of race or an ethnicity. It crosses every socioeconomic boundary we know of. These are people that have a disease, and however they got there is not for us in law enforcement to judge. It's only our responsibility to help if we have means to do so, and we do.
Chief Campanello, thanks so much.
You're very welcome.
After we left Chief Campanello in Gloucester, we went down to gorgeous Good Harbor Beach. Here's the very first person we saw.
My brother, heroin addict. So I hope they get help.
All our stories in this week's series are at hereandnow.org. Your thoughts welcome. Tomorrow, race and heroin.